Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Team sport that, you know, sometimes, you know, it's something that happens to a lot of teams, and you have to be emotionally focused and, you know, find a way. And a lot of times with guys like that, you know, particularly this off season where Tyreek has invested so much in his teammates, you know, that you're inspired to, you know, to pick up the slack and make sure that they don't have the double somber moment of the injury, which you can't control, and then have to, you know, have it happen in a loss. You just try to do your best with what you can control, support your teammate, and try to get in the win column.
All right, and with Mike McDaniel talking about the loss of Tyreek Hill, we're joined this morning by Kyle Krabs, the host of Locked On Fins podcast and A to Z Sports. Kyle, good morning. How you doing there, brother?
I'm doing good, Joe. How about yourself?
Man, I'm hanging in there. A little easier when you win a game. And by the way, let's start with the Tyreek Hill news and replacing him and what will change the most and who needs to pick it up. I'm just curious, with Tyreek Hill now not going to be with the Dolphins the rest of the season.
Yeah, I don't think you replace Tyreek Hill, especially with an individual, right? I mean, the wide receiver room, splitting those reps between Malik Washington, Nick Westbrook-Ikhine, probably a safe bet. But you look at some of what the Dolphins did after that injury happened, and you're seeing multiple tight ends, and that's what makes the return and the play of Darren Waller so important. And you've got two running backs, and one of them could be a really prominent player in the passing game, and Devon Achane. Jalen Waddle's target share is obviously going to go up significantly. I think it takes a village to replace a player that has the gravitational pull of a player like a Tyreek Hill. And I think that's something that you never want to see an injury happen, especially one as tough as the one that it looked like Tyreek had. But I know one of the talking points about when considering a future without Tyreek Hill was being a little bit more evenly distributed on offense. And I think if this is going to work for them, they're going to have to lean into that.
Yes, totally agree. Hey, I get asked this because there was so much talk about too deep. Do defenses now change the way they play, not so deep, come back up a little bit or more, not worried about the speed, especially of a Tyreek Hill now?
Yeah, I think it changes the numbers as far as if you want to bracket Waddle and what that does for your box count. And I think your counter there, if you're Miami, is we really haven't seen a lot of Waddle being the player utilized in motion at the snap. So if you want to manufacture momentum releases for him or free releases outside of putting him into a bunch or a stack or whatever else, I think that may be something that's a little different for Jalen, is him being the player who's in motion and therefore is guaranteed to get that free release because his momentum is forcing a player to play in pursuit of him before the snap happens.
Yeah.
But I certainly do think this conversation around the shell, it'll probably change. And then the Dolphins then will have to implement their own share of adjustments to counter that and ensure that when it's time to get your best receiver the football, you're putting them in positions to not allow coverage to blanket universally take him out of the game.
See, and I think Malik Washington is going to be that guy that's going to start doing a lot more things with the motion and get more involved and get his hands on the ball a little bit more because he's so sharp. They just count on, they trust him, picks up, you tell him something one time and he just takes it all in. But hey, the other one I wanted to get into is Darren Waller. I gotta be honest with you, man. Been doing this a long time. I've never seen a guy 631 days since his last NFL game look this quick. And by the way, setbacks all through camp and the first couple of games to go out and look that good. Had fresh legs, obviously, but just no rust, no sign of rust the way he went up. And having that guy as a 6'6 weapon with those long arms and being able to go back, especially in the red zone, what a weapon if he can stay healthy the rest of the way, huh?
Yeah, it's a really, really cool story. And obviously for Darren and his journey, it's really cool to see that kind of come together for him in his first game with Miami. And he even had a few reps where he wasn't targeted on the play. But like you said, there's a dynamic ability there and a separation ability. And now you get a little bit of proof of concept and we're winning across the face in the middle of the field on third downs. We're going up above the rim in the red zone. It was fun to see the ways he popped up, and I think they did a good job as far as third downs and in the red zone and making sure you're not putting too much on his plate. And if you told me he got 20 snaps a game, I'd be totally fine with it because yes, of what I think the impact of those 20 snaps would be each week.
Yeah. What a story. I mean, the mental health, the addiction, a leader in it, doesn't hide from it. The demons that he's dealt with to getting back out here. And by the way, has just kept himself, I guess his workouts are legendary since he stopped playing football the first time. So just a nice all around story as a leader and all the things that I didn't even know about here until recently told by a family member who's a big fan of Darren Waller. So I got to ask you this one, getting to the other side. First of all, Mike McDaniel's game plan, I thought was one of the best game plans for everybody. Offensive line, Tua, outside the pocket. I thought it was one of the best game plans I've seen Mike McDaniel have in a while.
Well, what really struck me was it felt more like the 22 offense, where you saw under center, you saw the boot action, you saw the play action with the boot and the stress that caused and the crossers that came out of that. And so I thought Tua executed it well. It looked like kind of the bread and butter type of stuff when you go back to some of the foundational stuff of what this offense was built upon when it first started. And I think that's what's interesting to me with that game plan coming out of a self-scouting opportunity where you had 11 days between games. And in the first 3 weeks, the Dolphins were calling play action under 18.5% of their dropbacks. When the first season that Tua was with the Mike McDaniel, that number was 45%. So seeing how they came out against the Jets, I'm really fascinated to see if it looks similar and has a similar feel against Carolina. And if it does, especially with that under center and now without Tyreek Hill, I think you lean into that. And I think it maybe looks a little bit more traditional Shanahan-y. And I think that's your recipe for having a successful offense that can be productive and score enough points to give you a chance to win everything.
Boy, what a commitment to stick with the run. I know everybody's been asking for it, and boy, you got it. And it looked a lot better. And I think, as you said, with the bootlegs and play action, it really, really opened up a lot of things. All right, to the other side. I still want to play all the young guys. I'm not changing. Hey, Jordan Phillips, Kenneth Graham, as long as you guys don't lose your confidence, you guys, I want you to learn, man. Keep going. You can't give up on them after four games for the guys that are struggling. But the run defense with these numbers, 158 yards a game, they're giving up 5.1 average. It's got to get better or it's going to make business real difficult going forward.
Yeah, I do want to give a compliment to the Jets and their offensive line. Their pass protection stuff was not good, but they have a really good group of guys to run the football with. And, you know, it is a group of young guys, and that's a headache that the Dolphins are going to have to solve long term. But I want to give them their flowers for their execution of it. It gets compounded by a quarterback in Justin Fields and what he does in the run game. And you could tell everybody was a little out of sorts with the fits and what Fields was doing with the mesh point and right. pulling, and sometimes he keeps and sometimes he...
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Doesn't, I don't think you'll face that degree of difficulty every week. If you told me when it's all said and done, that's one of the better run defenses in football. Now, that's not an excuse for almost 200 yards on the ground. We got to figure it out, right? But to your point with all the young guys that are playing, we just got to continue to get better playing the point of attack up front. I think that's the biggest thing is the consistency of that. And I don't think that field surface really helped on Monday night either. It looked pretty slick. You saw a lot of guys kind of struggling with footing. So if you're not consistent and disciplined with your pad level in the first place, and then you have that stacked on top of it, there's a couple of things here that I'd like to think we're going to see a nice little bounce back from them. But the numbers are what the numbers are, and you face some prolific dual threat quarterbacks thus far, and Josh Allen and what he does with his legs and the field. So they got a lot to figure out.
Hey, my eyeballs told me Rasul Douglas and Jack Jones are really good. Even on the touchdown, the coverage was really, really good on what ended up being a hell of a catch. But what are your thoughts on the two vets on the outside?
Yeah, I don't think they're anywhere near the top of the list of what your problems look like right now.
No.
I mean, Jack Jones with that punch out was an outstanding effort play. He is a big-time juice guy. And Rasul had a couple of really nice run fits, tackles, had the pass defense where he fell off in zone coverage, his instincts taking over. I think that group is going to continue to solidify. Now, the nickel position, something that they got to figure out. The consistency of the backers behind the defensive line is something that you got to figure out. And you know, I think the group that needs to figure out the most is the guys on the edge right now. I think that's the group. You know, and if you'd have told me that a month ago, I don't know that I believe you. It said, hey, corners and edge, which one has more questions after four games? I say corner. But I think it's the edge group right now.
Who's struggling the most of the group? I know Chop Robinson, we keep hearing about Chop's, you know, hey, Chop's not getting there. And Jalen Phillips dropped back into coverage a little bit. What'd you think? Who's giving you the best pass rush right now of the four guys?
I think Jalen is comfortably, in my opinion, playing the best football, and it just hasn't shown up in the stat sheet yet. And I think the inverse of that is Brad has three sacks in the first three games, but you watch some of the run defense stuff, and when he's not getting tight ends or when the quarterback's not up in the pocket and kind of sliding his way to clean it up, I don't think that he looks like a guy who's knocking off the rust. And I think the question for him, after missing all year last year, you're kind of 4 weeks in now, how much of this is rust versus how much of this is a guy who's had some injuries and now is trying to figure out what his ceiling is and what his floor is as a player right now. And we probably need a few more weeks until I feel like we have a definitive answer on that front, but the Chop thing's super frustrating because it's just not snaps, right? But then you watch some of the reps that he does get when he's on the front side and they run the ball, and it's not anchoring the way that it needs to, and that's a big part of the Dolphins' problem right now is early down success. So I think there's some problems here with a couple of these guys that are compounding each other, and it's Chop's got to hold the line cleaner. I think Bradley's got to play with a little bit more consistent separation to play off of blocks and make plays and leverage his gaps.
Hey, before I let you run, how did Cole Strange play? Looked like just my eyeballs thought as the third guy now coming in and getting a chance to start looked pretty good. And with that, how did Larry Borum do on the right side?
So, yeah, Larry got ran over by Michael Clemens on a pressure, and it was a really ugly rep. I thought the run game stuff was sturdy, and that's kind of where I sit with Larry is, you know, I think you're going to take some wins and losses in pass pro, but I think in the run game, he gives you more than enough to work with. And I thought that was the same against the Jets. And then for Cole, I think as a guy who only got here 3 weeks ago, there were ups and downs, but I think there was enough there that you give him another opportunity this week and look to see if he stacks and if he's better this week than last week. And I would expect that he would be. And if that's the case, that's going to be a really nice depth development for Miami with another guy who can play all three spots on the interior. So it wasn't like a prolific performance, but I think there's a lot to work with there. And I think it was really impressive the way that he came in after just being in the system for 3 weeks and applied it and the way that he played.
Good stuff, Kyle, as always. Really appreciate it. And hey, man, I feel good about this Carolina game. How do you feel before I let you ride?
Yeah, some good matchups here for sure. And, you know, we won't see Robert Hunt. Hopefully Rob's doing well and heals up. He had a muscle tear. He's on injured reserve. So I was bummed for that because Rob's one of my favorite guys from this past iteration and cycle of the team from that 2020 class. Big personality. He's a big-time presence on the field. But his absence will be big. And for a Dolphins defensive front that is looking to hold the line, Rob being in might give you a chance to help that cause a little bit. Yeah. So I like some of the matchups this week against Carolina.
All right, Kyle, thanks, buddy. Have a good one. Of course. Thank you. All right.
You too.
Kyle Krabs, host of Locked On Fins podcast and A to Z Sports.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.